Good evening and welcome back to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial, and lakeshorepublicradio.org if you're streaming us anywhere else on this wonderful globe of ours. Tonight, this program, which is all about music and the people who make it, is welcoming first-time guest A.J. Croce. And again, if that name sounds familiar, it should, because his father was one of the greatest songwriters of the 1970s era. When I was growing up, I was a huge fan. I am looking forward to speaking with AJ. But let me preface this by saying that he is his father's son. In fact, that he's so talented. But his sound is a lot different. Don't lump him in. But we are going to also realize the fact that he pays tribute to his dad. And he's going to be coming to the winery here in Chicago so that he can do just that. And we're going to feature him covering one of his dad's most famous songs, as well as original tunes from his most recent album, an album called Just Like Medicine. So let's let the music do the talking, and let's give you a classic A.J. Croce original. This is off his latest album from 2017. This is Gotta Get Out of My Head. And we're going to get into his head next after this. A.J. joining us.
Gotta get out of my head, cause I can't take a company. Gotta get out of my head, gotta get out of my head, gotta get out of my head, cause I can't take a company. Better stay out of my heart, better stay out of my heart, better stay out of my heart, cause you might fall in love with me.
Gotta get out of my head. Well, we're going to get into the head of Mr. A.J. Croce, the gentleman that gave us that song, in just a second here. That is off his latest album, which is Just Like Medicine, released in, I believe, late 2017, which means maybe he's working on some new stuff. I know he's on the road, and we're going to talk to him right now. Mr. Croce, are you with us?
I am, man.
Hey, good to talk with you. I love the new album, or the latest album, I should say. You've got some new stuff forthcoming. You have a new single, or a more recent single, your cover of I Got a Name, which we're going to get to in a bit. But you're on the road right now. So tell us about the live show you're bringing to the Chicago Winery on July 10th.
Well, that one is going to be an intimate show. I'm playing with David Berard, bass player and singer, just a duo, and it's going to be fun because, you know, David is a legendary New Orleans bass player. Was with Dr. John for 30 years.
And mm-hmm.
Before that, with Alan Toussaint and Etta James, and on and on. And we have a really good vibe together.
Was he featured on that last song we just played? Because it's got that Dr. John kind of gris sound to it.
That was actually David Hood from Muscle Shoals.
Okay. Well, that explains the groove of it then, too, because that was a really strong song. And your style changes from song to song and from album to album, which is, in my opinion, a sign of a great artist because it shows evolution. Nobody gets comfortable in the pocket, so to speak. So with this album out now about 2 years, is there songs being written as we speak here while you're on the road that we're going to be blessed with on a future album soon?
Yes. Yeah, I've got two projects. One is going to be a cover album, stuff that I've done around the house and the requests from the friends that come over and say, hey, will you play this? Will you play that?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really diverse, but it's going to be really fun.
Give us an example of a song you might cover and what kind of treatment you might give it to put your own fingerprints on it.
It's really diverse. So might be a Billy Preston song, you know, might be a Neil Young song, but if I approach the Neil Young song, then I'll be approaching it as a gospel song.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them, and I'm looking for it. I mean, I there's so many, there could be a Velvet Underground song. There could be, an old, 30s song. I'm going to be playing guitar on a few things, probably do a Solomon Burke song. Probably do a Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee song. And so on.
When will you start working on this? Is there a target date for release or?
I mean, it's going to come out spring of next year. So I'm going to, I intend to go into the studio on August 1st.
Okay. This album, this latest album that we're playing from tonight, Just Like Medicine, was produced by Dan Penn. Dan's got deep roots in soul music. Is that what gives this this album in particular such a groovy bass?
Well, of course. And we really hit it off and sort of started with with us getting together and writing a song and it felt great. And then we decided to do like a single, like a real real recording. So half the musicians were from Muscle Shoals Horns, David Hood, and then We had McCrary sisters singing background, you know, just phenomenal group. You know, we recorded it in mono, not because of it being a soul record, but because everyone's listening to their music on their phone and on their, you know, iPad and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered a few years back that mono sounds much better on those small speakers. So that's why I did it. And so we approached the, you know, we had 16 tracks, 2-inch tape. There were no digital animals, you know, injured in the process of making this.
Okay.
It was a thrill. It was a real thrill. And yeah, I wasn't sure, you know, whether it was going to be a single or a record. But after we did the demo, and it turned out so well, he and I talked, and I said, "You want to finish this thing?" And he said, "Yeah." So that was. What we did.
What song was that? That first song together.
The first song we only wrote one song together on that album. That was The Other Side of Love.
Okay.
And the single was The Other Side of Love, and Cures Is Like Medicine.
Okay. Well, we were talking about the soul effect of this album and the funkiness of it. Why don't we do the one you wrote with Leon? You want to play that? Is there a story about how that happened?
Well, Leon and I met back in the 90s. I was opening for him, and I didn't ever really know that he was listening to my stuff. And then we became pals via Willie Nelson.
Hmm.
And we just talked about music and talked about, you know, the stuff we liked, and, you know, it was funny, you know, he didn't know who my dad was. He had, you know,
really?
Didn't know any of the hits, but, he dug my playing. And so, you know, we wrote an album's worth of music. And so we said, you know, he dug the New Orleans style of, mm-hmm. of my playing, and we just really clicked. And most of it was written, you know, in two different places. There was only one time when we were in Austin, we were playing Willie's backyard barbecue, and we spent, you know, 3 or 4 hours writing together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had a lot of things in common as far as our influences, from, you know, Ray Charles to Pete Johnson and you know, Mead Lux Lewis and Fats Waller and Willie the Lion Smith, and you know, all kinds of stuff, long hair, and on and on, and that was a thing. We would get together and talk about music.
So there's a lot more songs that you guys actually collaborated on, other than the one we're about to play here, "The Heart That Makes Me Whole."
Yeah, absolutely. And I had hoped to have Leon on the record, but he was sick. And then, mm-hmm. tribute. So I called my old friend Steve Cropper, and he came in and you know played the guitar on it.
Hmm. Well, this is a brilliant song. It's at this point, because like any good record, as the more you listen to it, you start leaning more towards a different song. But currently, this is my favorite song off the album, Just Like Medicine. My guest is A.J. Croce. We will be back with him in just a minute. But pay attention to this. It's really got a groove. This is The Heart That Makes Me Whole. Getting on the good foot with that one. Soulful stuff. A.J. Croce, good stuff there off his latest album, 2017's Just Like Medicine. And we have A.J. on the phone. He will be at the Chicago City Winery on July 10th. And that's going to be a very intimate show, as you were saying, A.J. But I want to find out something, and that is how and what drew you to music for your way of life? Despite the DNA, obviously you come from a very famous family. Your mom and your dad were both performers. But you were a toddler when he passed. How did you come to music?
It came to me.
Okay.
You know, I started playing piano when I, you know, before I could walk. You know, it was one of those things. And, you know, as a kid, I lost my sight, and gradually, got part of my vision back between the ages of, 4 and 10. And during that time, I got turned on to Ray TV, and then I, you know, I did the history, you know, I went back to the Stride players, the Blue players, the New Orleans stuff, you know, and always pushed myself to do different kinds of music, and so, I mean, that was it. It was I didn't have a choice. It was just in me, you know. I'm a fifth generation musician.
Okay, so it definitely is the family business then.
It is, yeah.
Okay. When did you know that you were going to make this your career rather than just a hobby or something to keep your friends entertained?
I was 12. Wow. I got hired for a private party from a schoolmate of mine. Their father hired me to play, I think for half an hour, and I got paid $20.
That entices you.
Yeah. And you know, and so I realized that if I kept on practicing and working at it, that it was I'd be able to do it.
Okay. Now, you are a piano man. That is your first instrument. That's what you're known for.
Yeah.
But you also play guitar. Right. Are you going to be doing guitar on this show at the winery?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll play piano and guitar.
I don't know. I can't think of doing anything else. Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I've made a living, a good living, since I was 15, playing at piano bars, playing in rock bands, playing in jazz bands, you know, and so, I mean, I knew I was going to do it. And then when I was 16, was sort of taken under the wing of a guy named Floyd Dixon. Floyd was a boogie player, got started in the late 40s, and he wrote a bunch of famous, you know, drinking songs, like One Scotch, One Bourbon, One Beer.
Okay.
And Wine, 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 and Hey Bartender. And I opened for him you know, for about a year. And our shows, you know, would finish, you know, with the two of us playing four-handed piano, like, you know, me, Lux Lewis, and Albert Ammons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he was very encouraging. And, you know, played a lot of gigs around Southern California. And then the next year, I got a call to do a session for Cowboy Jack Clement. If your audience isn't familiar with him, he was the staff producer and engineer and writer for Sun Records, starting in 1953 up to 1960 when he moved to Nashville. At the request of Chet Atkins. And so it was an interesting thing. I walked in. As I was walking into his studio, Jerry Lee was walking out, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, produced Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, you know,
right.
Jerry Lee, Roy Orbison, and then most notably, you know, Johnny Cash. For 50 years, they worked together until Johnny Cash passed away, and it's sort of a bit of a bittersweet. But story was that he gave me my first session as a piano player, and I hired him
When did Cowboy Jack pass away?
I think it was in 2014.
Okay, I didn't realize he had passed. He was also part of Rolling Thunder Review, wasn't he, for a short time? With Dylan?
I don't know about that.
I thought he had something to do with that. But you had mentioned about some of the Barrel House stuff. Barrel House piano is like a lost sound now. Pine Top Perkins spent many years here in Indiana and right outside of Chicago, and we lost him a couple of years ago. And there's really not too many folks playing that style anymore. I'd like to see that come back.
Yeah, well, I played with Pine Top. I played a four-handed piano with Pine Top Perkins, and we had a blast.
Any of that on tape or video that might come out someday?
No.
That's a shame.
No. But, you know, I was sort of, I got a lot of encouragement from, you know, from the folks along the way. Some of them knew my dad, some of them didn't, you know, and you know, I grew as an artist. You know, first as a piano player, and then as a songwriter, and then a singer. And so, you know, it wasn't like it was all at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my you know, piano playing came first, and the singing and songwriting came second. And
about what age did you start writing? You mentioned that you started playing piano almost as soon as you walked, but when did you start writing? Do you remember your first song when you sat down to do it?
I was about 12.
Okay.
I was about 12 years old. And then, yeah, so after that, after the session with Cowboy and the work with Floyd Dixon, I got a call to go on the road with B.B. King. And then, you know, I guess maybe some of it was luck, some of it was, you know, timing, some of it was talent, I guess. But I ended up working with a lot of R&B artists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Toussaint was a huge influence on me. I had heard a recording he did with Irma Thomas, It's Raining, and I just needed to know everything about it, you know, and we became friends, and he produced a couple songs of mine, one which was co-written by, you know, myself and Leon, and every time I went to New Orleans, he would come to the show, and we'd finish the show off with a four-handed piano, and you know, it was a thrill, and that was later, and you know, I was in my you know, early 40s when that happened, and then mm-hmm. You know, I picked up guitar in my 30s because I wanted I saw so many options as a piano player. I really wanted to simplify things, and I thought it would improve my songwriting. And a lot of times people don't think of piano players as songwriters because you know, there's sort of that folk tradition of you know, of the troubadour
mm-hmm.
playing guitar and singing, but you know.
A lot of the artists I talk with say that they write on piano, even if they're known for playing another instrument, that writing on the piano seems to be the organic way to do it.
Sure. I mean, Tim Pan Alley was all piano, all those standards, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So however they're arranged, they were done like that, you know. And the Neville brothers were really really supportive. I must have done 80 shows with them around the world, and became really, really close. And it was, Yeah, I had always, since I was 13 and really, you know, got the bug, you know, for AT, for Alan Toussaint and his production and his, I mean, he taught me, you know, through the music I listened to, he taught me how to arrange, he taught me how harmonies work, he taught me, you know, it was all of that, you know. So in the 90s when I was playing a lot with the Nevilles, it was like family.
Mm-hmm. Have you spent much time in New Orleans? I mean, you are calling from Nashville today. Is that where you are living these days?
Yeah, I live in Nashville, but...
Because you have such a Memphis, New Orleans kind of sound. You don't have a Nashville sound, per se.
Well, there's actually a big, long tradition of R&B here. It's just not... They were on indie labels.
Okay.
You know? You know, King Records was here.
I didn't realize that. That's right. Okay.
And so, you know, folks like James Brown recorded here. I mean, you know, Little Willie John, you know, all that stuff. And so, Jefferson Street was like the street here in town where, you know, there was jazz, there was R&B, and even though, for many years, you know, people have thought of Nashville as a country town. It's really less of a country town than ever. And that community on Jefferson was relatively isolated in the sense that, you know, they weren't playing the Grand Ole Opry. They weren't playing the big places. They were playing juke joints.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so, I mean, After that, others, you know, B.B. King and Nevilles, I went out with James Brown and Aretha, and played a lot of different kinds of stuff. You know, I recorded with Waylon Jennings, who's a fan, and I've recorded, you know, and I've played on stage many times with Willie Nelson, and so. And, you know, I was always into rock and roll, so especially 50s and 60s stuff. So I was, you know, the first band I was in, I was 15, playing a Vox Continental, you know, doing garage band, you know, rock and roll, which was kind of like, it was just like a harder, you know, more rockin' version of R&B.
Mm-hmm.
So it just made sense to me. And then...
Well, that I'm thinking that would have been in the early 80s, and retro was real big. We had the Stray Cats coming back. We had the punk residue still left, which was basically early garage rock in its early days. So
yeah.
you were in a very fertile ground there.
I was. And, you know... It's you know, the thing about being living in San Diego, I was born in Philly, and my folks moved to San Diego, and it was a good place in some ways, in the worst way, because it's the hardest city to play.
Mm-hmm.
The audience is, you know, sun's out, everything's, you know, it's beautiful. People go to socialize for music, you know. And so on my first, you know, on my first tours with, you know, when I was, you know, first got signed, and I was touring with Taj Mahal, and we played. I think our first gig was a couple nights in New York City. I was terrified. I was like, it's New York and all that stuff, and
mm-hmm.
and I realized that, like, I had been really growing up in a place where people weren't, you know, music of his background music. They loved it, don't get me wrong, but it was you know, people came to socialize and the music was a benefit. And so to learn how to win over the audience, to be an entertainer and win over the audience in that town was a training ground. I don't think I'd be the performer that I am if I hadn't had, you know, to play in a town that was, you know, so hard to get people's attention.
Right. They threw you in the deep end of the pool and you learned to swim.
Yeah.
Okay. I've talked to a lot of offspring of famous performers over the years, and a lot of them have tried to, especially early on in their career, distance themselves from their heritage. But you recently sure. have embraced yours. You're doing the Croce Plays Croce shows. You just right. did I Got a Name. But you certainly have a sound that's totally and wholly different from your dad's. Of course, anyone listening, I'm talking about Jim Croce. AJ is my guest. This is Lakeshore Public Radio, and we're talking about the new album he's got out. But I've got to reflect back on, you were, again, a toddler when he passed. What does his songs and his music say to you, not only as a son, but as a fellow performer? When you listen to his music, I mean, what do you think, especially having gone in and covered I Got a Name, which we're going to play in just a moment?
I grew up listening to his record collection.
Okay.
Not that I didn't, you know, love his music and that it didn't mean a lot because it was my dad, you know. But I grew up listening to his collection. There was a lot of, you know, he was from the, you know, beat generation. So there was jazz, there was a lot of blues, especially country blues like Mississippi John Hurt, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee and Son House and on and on and on. And but there was also all kinds of 50s rock and roll because he grew up in Philly and there was lots of R&B and there was of course a lot of rock and roll, and it was where, you know, it was where American Bandstand was. So I never thought, you know, for the first 20 some years of my career, it was off limits, you know, to talk about him in interviews. And I wanted my own identity, and whether I am thought of as a singer, a songwriter, or a piano player, I wanted to be. I needed to prove myself, and I turned down a lot of opportunities because that was not what I was looking to do.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, I had a lot of chart success, and all my records had charted, and I just went, I played one of his songs one night at a show, and the audience loved it. And I started to think about being able to put a show together. Now, if I were to just do a show of nostalgia, just cover band thing of just doing my dad's stuff, I'd have absolutely no interest.
Mm-hmm.
But I came up with this idea of the fact that we were both influenced by this record collection. And as you see it, as you hear it, you recognize that we have a lot more in common than you might think. Yeah, the production is different, and he was, you know, more of a guitar player. You know, he was a guitar player, But, you know, he was listening to Chuck Berry. He was listening to Sam Cooke. He was listening to, you know, to Etta James. He was listening to, you know, all kinds of you know, Fats Domino. And, mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then he, even though he was listening to jazz, he was also listening to, he was, you know, he got into folk. You know, so our paths sort of separated in the fact that I dove into performing the, you know, the hardest jazz stuff from the 20s, you know, from Ellington to Fats Waller and James P and Little Lion and Jelly Roll Morton and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that. And you can't forget that I was, you know, I grew up with a transistor radio by my bed.
Right.
You know,
under the pillow like we all had.
Yeah. And I'd hear an ELO song or a McCartney song or you know, whatever it was. And I'd run down to the piano and try and figure it out before the song was over.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Stones, of course. You know, to me it was like, yeah, we have, I think there's more in common than not. It's
so when you're doing the Croce Plays Croce shows, is that a full, are you touring with that show and a full band, or is it a one man band or a duo, or
band? It's a full band.
Okay. But you're not doing just your dad's songs. You're doing the songs that influenced you both as well as your dad's songs.
I'm doing, you know, whatever, 26 years of you know, choice, you know, chosen songs of mine.
Right.
I'm doing the music that we were both influenced by.
Okay.
And then I'm, and then of course I'm doing his music, and I know the audience loves to hear the hits, and so, you know, I want to make them happy, and in turn it makes me happy.
Right.
If I did the Croce Plays Croce, you know, all the time, I think it would be too much.
Right.
But as it stands, I play, you know, one or two shows like that a month, and it's rewarding, and the audience loves it, and. You know, I have a lot of people that come to see me. I have a lot of people that, you know, just come to see him.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's play the cover you just did, I Got a Name. We'll find out why you did that particular song. And we'll say goodbye on the other side as we get into a final track. But this is A.J. Croce paying tribute to his father, Jim Croce, on Lakeshore Public Radio, the Midwest Beat program.
Hey, brother.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, and I know you got this thing started, but there's a really interesting story about how this happened, and I think it would be better to tell it before.
Okay, let's do that.
This is the only song my dad had a hit with that was not his own, and yet the lyrics were couldn't have been, you know, written more for another person, you know? Except for maybe me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no intention for I Got a Name to be an album or for it to be on an album. He recorded it for a film about a NASCAR driver, Jimmy Johnson. And
was he a NASCAR fan?
My dad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mostly the novelty races like myself.
Okay.
You know, which I've taken my kids to, well, when they were young, as often as I could, but that's another story. So, so I got a call from Goodyear. I was on tour. I was in Spain, and they said, would you be interested in, recording I Got a Name? And they told me about it, and it was for a NASCAR driver, Dale Earnhardt Jr., and it was his favorite song. And the idea of it, of the sort of full circle, was you know, really fascinating to me, and there was something kind of magical about it. And so I said sure, and I didn't expect it to ever come out as a single. I really didn't, just like my dad didn't expect I Got a Name to be the title track or even come out as a single. It was just going to be for a film, and this was for Goodyear's, you know, farewell retirement to another NASCAR legend. And so the parallels were really unique, and there was something just special about it. So I went in, recorded it live, and now you're going to hear it.
All right, this is it. We'll be back a final time to say goodbye and close out with A.J. Croce, who's coming to Chicago's Winery on July 10th. This is I Got a Name. A.J. style.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I got a name, I got a name. Like the singing bird and the croaking toad, I got a name, I've got a name. And I carry it with me like my daddy did, but I'm living the dream that he kept here. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't pass me by. When whistling down the sky, I've got a song, I've got a song. Like the whippoorwill and the baby's cry, I've got a song, I've got a song. And I carry it with me and I sing it loud. If it gets me nowhere, I'll go there proud. Moving down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't pass me by. They can change the mind, but they can't change me. I've got a dream, I've got a dream. And you know I could share it if you want me to. If you're going my way, I'll go with you. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving ahead so life won't pass me by. Moving me down the highway, rolling me down the highway, moving no hell so life won't pass me by.
Good. covering his dad's song. Jim Croce gave us that one back in the day, and that is A.J. Croce. He's got a name, and that's it. You can keep up with him at ajcrocemusic.com. He's got a quarter century of making music his way under his belt, 10 albums in his catalog, and, of course, a great treatment there of his father's hit with more covers to come. A.J., it's been a pleasure having you on. When is the covers album coming out? Sometime early next year?
Yeah, early next year.
Do you have a title for it yet?
Not yet. I have to think about it.
All right. Well, thank you. We will see you July 10th at Chicago's City Winery. Is there anything we haven't touched on that that you'd like to let someone know?
Well, not that I can think of, but don't be discouraged by the fact that it's a two-piece, because it's an energetic show, and we really, really have fun. And David Berard, you know, is New Orleans legend, and the harmonies, it's just the whole thing is a really fun, energetic show that we've been doing for a little while now, and I hope you can make it.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. And again, keep up with AJ online at ajcrocemusic.com. And the full list of any performances, as well as news of when that album's coming out, the covers album, and any further information you may want. So great photos, videos, songs. And AJ, again, thank you so much.
Thanks for your time, man.
Travel safe. Let's leave the listeners with, I guess this would be the title track. It's Cures Just Like Medicine. The album is Just Like Medicine, and it came out in 2017. And again, a final song from my guest tonight here on Midwest Beat, AJ Croce. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and stay safe and keep rocking. Adios.
I've been betrayed by the ones I love. Lost faith in the Lord above. A saint of the way I've acted, changed by my circumstances. Someone gave me hope I love. So as his heaven sent cures just like medicine. I gave my heart to ride with reckless drivers. Trust I lost, no good liars, my money paid. Countless parties, what a waste. Well, now I'm sorry. Someone gave a love, now I'll say. So has his heaven sent cures just like medicine. So has his heaven sent cures just like medicine. Seen the world so many times.
So has his heaven sent cures just like medicine.